It's the Eagles and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl or Super Bowl 59. And a guy who will be there in the booth next to Kevin Burkhardt and Tom Brady is Mike Pereira, current rules analyst at Fox Sports. Kind enough to join us on the River Islands guest line. He's a former vice president of officiating in the NFL. And we got some things to get to, Mike. We appreciate the time today as he joins us on the River Islands guest line. All guests on any 5-7 the game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands and Lathrop? Let's get into it. Mike, Bonte Hill, Joe Shasky, the Butcher, we appreciate the time as always. We know you're a busy, busy guy, so let's get into it. Obviously, a lot of controversy in the Buffalo-Kansas City game about the tush push. But I want to go to a play before that, Mike. Don Kincaid catches a pass at 3rd-and-3. He gets tackled. Maybe it's at the first down marker or whatnot. But in that situation, I wonder, because Buffalo rushed to the line of scrimmage and snapped that fourth down play with 26 seconds left, how can you go about getting a measurement on the field today? Is it from up top where the booth says, you know what, it's short of the first down, continue to play on? Can Sean McDermott scream for a measurement? Because I thought Buffalo should have maybe relaxed a little bit before that fourth down play to be sure of themselves. So what is the criteria there for asking for a measurement?
It's where have the measurements gone?
Right.
You don't see them very much. I always love those old guys running out in the middle of the field, you know, and handing the rods to the official and put it down. Mm-hmm. I think that those are almost a thing of the past. I think it's going to be something with lasers coming up within a year or two where it'll be an automatic quick measurement. But nevertheless, in that situation, you know that it's in the hands of the officials inside of 2 minutes. You have to be very, very careful about stopping the clock and giving an advantage to one team or the other. And obviously, right, when you're at that point of the game, you know, it's critical. And so what happened in that situation is they reviewed the spot immediately. And you can do that because they have like 16 different camera shots that they can use, including in that game what's called a pylon camera. So they saw that when the ball hit the ground, it was short. It was indeed short. We're talking about the third down play.
Yeah, third down play. Now, remember, Mike, this was late. This was early fourth quarter. This was about 9:22, I want to say, in the fourth quarter when that happened.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. That's right. I'm sorry about that.
Remember the tush push with Josh Allen? Kincaid gets tackled on 3rd-and-3, and this wasn't under 2 minutes. So I was just wondering, can McDermott ask for a challenge? Because Buffalo's all scattered. And even if he doesn't ask for a challenge or be asked for a measurement, can he challenge that play? Because there was so much time left in the game with Buffalo up 22-21.
Yeah, certainly it has to be a challenge, and I confused it with another play, but that would be a challenge. He could actually challenge the call, or he could request a measurement. And, you know, as I said, where the measurement's gone, you know, if a coach tries to ask for a measurement and it's first down going to second, second going to third, he's not likely to get that granted. I mean, if it's third going to fourth or fourth down, then literally, if he is asking for a measurement, he should get it. And in this particular play, I don't know if he asked for it. And I know that the instant replay, the replay official, you know, it was too close for him to make a decision to either make it a first down or to leave it as a fourth down. And so he left it. But I do think that the ball touched the ground before it actually in possession of the runner, before it did get to the line to gain, although it is very close. And to me, it would have been appropriate to have a measurement in that situation.
You know, it's so interesting. You brought up lasers or whatever in the football. I know that there's a lot of people that want to chip and different things like that. Spotting of the football, it's one of those things that I've always thought is absurd, you know, it's a difficult task, right? You're on the sidelines looking through thousands of pounds of bodies. You got one guy on one side, one guy on the other. And now with television, and now that you're off the field and in the broadcast booth, it is crazy how many times the audience, and 99.9% of us are watching from our couch, is seeing how inexact the whole spotting of the ball is. Take me through these discussions for the league and for you as someone who talks about rules. Like, the spotting of the ball has been a big contention for fans forever, it feels like.
And it is an inexact science. You use the right word because you are looking through bodies. The problem you know, there's problems with putting chips and balls in the first place. I mean, we tried it in the spring league with kickers, as a matter of fact. We put chips into the kicking balls, and the kickers went nuts. Now, kickers are nuts. So, you know, they felt like the ball was harder on the side where the chip was. They felt like it didn't rotate like it normally does. And I think you would have that same type of feedback from quarterbacks in the league if you tried to do something like that, to put a chip in the ball. But the other part to me, which is always why I was resistant to putting a chip in the ball, because what good does that do? Because even though you can maybe see where the ball is at its most forward point, how do you know when he's down? How do you know if the knee's down first? Is an elbow down first? Is a shin down first? And so unless you put, you know, chips into body parts, I don't think you're going to be accurate in the first place. So there really is issues there, and I think it's going to remain an inexact science. Now, there are plays that happen outside the hash mark. You get a pretty clear look of everything. But in the tush push and the quarterback sneaks, I hate to say it, but it's a guessing game. And most all of the time, you can't tell from replay, from the shots that you get from the television network or from the boundary cams. You just can't tell because you can't see everything. It's like at the goal line. You see the plunges into the end zone, the tush push into the end zone, and there's no signal from the officials because they never see the ball. So they have to run in, unpile the pile, and then look and see where the ball is in the hands of the runner, and then they make their signal based on that. It is inexact, and I don't know how you can make it exact, period, without further complicating it.
I'm thinking, again, whether it's lasers, chips, whatever, you're syncing it up with video, and you're trying to be as precise as possible, but we all agree it's difficult. But I'm watching this game, and I keep coming back to the broadcast stuff because I've been going to games my whole life, and I'm sitting down. I had never heard of the official saying they could grant a touchdown because of behavior off the field. And like all of America, I was like, whoa, didn't know we could do that. And then there was like a blended clock, and I was unaware of that because sometimes the play clock isn't synced up with the game clock. Like, wow, there were so many things. Just as someone who's now, again, not on the field, you're in the television, you're broadcasting this, you're a consumer to a degree like us, you're also part of the media. Isn't this kind of a bad look for the officials, for America, as we're betting lots and lots of money on all this stuff? It just doesn't feel like it's all on the up and up. I don't know why I came away thinking that.
To me, the bad look started in 1999 when we brought replay in. Mm. It put all the emphasis on the officials and slowed down everything. So they expose their mistakes more than they've ever been exposed before. Now, they make mistakes. They make mistakes in every game. I mean, in our game, I mean, they missed a holding call on Barkley that should have been called. They had a touchdown by Washington, and they had two linemen 4 yards downfield in the end zone. You know, officiating's never going to be perfect. Everybody's got to realize that. I don't care how much we continue to expand instant replay. It's never going to be perfect, just like players are never going to have a perfect game unless you don't play, and coaches are not going to coach a perfect game. It is a human game, but we don't want to accept that the fact that officials make mistakes, that standard is higher for them, and they accept that, and they understand that, but they also know that, you know, on field level with 22 guys running around, big, great speed, it's impossible to be perfect. But, you know, when it comes to some of the obscure rules, like I've been waiting 15 years on Fox now to say that that's a palpably unfair act. I was dying to say that. And I finally got my chance because I knew if I said palpably unfair act, everybody was going to say, what? It's like I'm waiting for somebody to stand under the goalpost and on a field goal attempt, jump up and bat it to keep it from going over the upright or the crossbar. I'm waiting to say that's a foul for goaltending. I'm waiting for these opportunities. And finally, I got the palpably unfair act, which is really what it is. It's more designed for if a substitute comes off the field and tackles a runner that's headed down the sidelines, then that's palpably unfair for that to happen. And the referee can do whatever he thinks it's equitable. But this rule book is complicated. Yeah. It's long. And there's a bunch of things in there that are reactions to one play that maybe happened in 1942. And then lo and behold, something crops up that, you know, we have the palpably unfair situation in Philadelphia.
I bet you Bill Belichick may be the only guy in America who knew that. Oh, Philadelphia may be your one of touchdown if the Commanders continue to do this, because he knew the rule book inside and out. Other than that, we were all lost, Mike, as we're talking to Mike Pereira here on the River Islands guest line on the Morning Rose, obviously in the Fox booth, current rules analyst at Fox Sports. We'll get to Brady in a second, because I know it must be cool to be in the same booth as him. But real quick, back to the tush push. How big of a talking point is that in league circles? And what do you do about this play? Because it feels like it's going nowhere. Instead, we're seeing teams evolve with it, playing tight ends at the quarterback spot to go in and get a quarterback sneak there to third and one. How difficult is this play to officiate? And what do you do about the tush push at all if you do something?
Well, I mean, certainly it's impossible to officiate. I mean, it's tough even on the lineups of the teams, offense and defense, because they crowd the neutral zone. And, you know, you don't call offside unless really the helmet gets like more than halfway beyond the neutral zone into the neutral zone. And then the ball disappears. So it's really brutally difficult. What could they do? You know, I think it'll get discussed again. You know, is there injury data that says that the play is unsafe? If there is, then they could ban it. And the question becomes how. And so the answer is to go back to where it was illegal to push a teammate forward in the field of play for a score or to reach the line to gain. Similar to what you have on defense, on the defensive side of the ball, on kicking plays, the defensive team cannot push a teammate into the offensive formation. That's a foul for unsportsmanlike conduct. Mm-hmm. So they could go back and do that. That, to me, is the only way that you could get rid of the tush push. It used to be that way, but they banned that because sometimes in situations, who are you pushing? Are you pushing the runner, which was the foul, or are you pushing a teammate that's in contact with the runner?
Wow. Do you think that will move it forward, Mike? You think maybe that's back on the table with running backs not being able to push their quarterback in on the tush push?
Yeah, that's certainly possible. But I think that, you know, we'll have to see, to me, whether the injury data, whether that's overtaken by the ugliness of the play. Mm-hmm. And certainly it got ugly down at the goal line in Philadelphia in that situation. But, you know, there was sentiment to change it last year, but there was not enough support, you know, to get the required number of votes to figure out even how to get rid of it, period. But I think it may get a little bit more support. But let's face this, too. It's been a pretty effective way to get a first down or to score a touchdown. And let's remember that this league is more concerned with offense than they are with defense. And so, you know, to me, that might be an element that sways them not changing it.
You eloquently bring me right to one of my favorite points. I just feel like defense, it's impossible to play. It's impossible to play in this day and age. I mean, these guys are engaging in routes and they're making contact, and you touch a guy a little and boom, it's a defensive hold or a grab or a PI. We want freedom of movement. I understand all that. I get really ticked off now with the sideline stuff. And you talked about, hey, they could pick up. This is a Saquon Barkley run off to the side where his foot is landing out of bounds and the DB is hitting him late and whatever. And I just feel like I've seen Patrick Mahomes do it to the Niners. I've seen other guys do it where they pretend like they're going to go out of bounds. The defenders ease up. That guy plants his foot in the ground a half a centimeter away from the out of bound line and then jumps back and cuts upfield and plows an unsuspecting defensive back. It's just really hard to play defense. And now I understand the guy's foot's fallen out of bounds, but why is the sideline such a safe space? We want guys to stay healthy. We want them to stay upright. We want to protect our quarterbacks. I think it's impossible to be a DB in this league nowadays near the sidelines when guys are coming at you. And I had a real problem with that Saquon Barkley penalty.
Yeah, I mean, I understand 2 points there. I mean, the first point is it's impossible to play defense. I got in a little bit of a ruckus with Richard Sherman when the Niners played in the Super Bowl in Miami, I think it was. And I said something inappropriate on an interview about him when I thought that he had said something inappropriate about the officials in a game that the Niners were in. And so we met face to face and we had a great conversation and settled the air. But the point was talking about to him about offense versus defense. He said, if my kid was going to play, what would be the first thing I would tell him? And Richard Sherman said, play offense. you know, that it's just too impossible. And then the second part on the hits out of bounds, at least the league did put in the fail safe this last year to where if they call a late hit out of bounds and the foot is not down out of bounds, which happened in the Mahomes case a year ago, or whatever it was, now the league can actually use replay to pick up that foul and to take it off. So it is a fail-safe for that reason, but it has to be clear that the foot is not down out of bounds. And also, if the foot touches out of bounds and then the runner continues to run upfield after a step that foot touching out of bounds, then that's not to be called. It's only when the player is headed out of bounds. It's tough, but player safety, we talk about offense, right? We talk about offense versus defense. The league likes offense. The same way with player safety. We have bent over backwards to protect players, whether it's quarterbacks, whether it's defenseless receivers, or whether it's players out of bounds. But that's just the way that the league has turned, in my mind, since 1994 when they put in further provisions to protect their quarterback. We've been headed in that direction for a long time and probably will. I mean, we're going to see pretty soon where it's just going to be illegal to block below the waist, period, mm-hmm. whether it's in the tackle box or outside the mm-hmm. tackle box. These days of trying to keep the skilled players into the game, everybody into the game, you know, I think that's going to continue on. And I'm not necessarily against that because you want your best players in the game. It makes for a better game. And you think about their life after football, which, you know, comes quickly. So that's just part of where we are right now, I think, in this game.
No, Don, I know you get sick of reading about the Chiefs conspiracy and how they get all these phone calls. I'm not going to waste your time asking you about that because teams got to control. I thought Buffalo had control of the football game and they botched that, not Kansas City. Or the referees, I don't think gave them aid at all. But lastly for you, Mike, because we do appreciate the time, man. Yeah, this has been fascinating stuff. What is it like working with the GOAT, Tom Brady, in that booth? And I thought Tom Brady has gotten better and better each week. I thought he was on fire when he opened that telecast on Sunday in Philadelphia, talk about what that game meant, getting to the Super Bowl, what it means for family, friends, organizationally. What has it been like working with Tom Brady this season, Mike?
I can honestly say I didn't really know what to expect. The only time I'd ever really met Tom Brady before that is in pregame in Foxborough when he was running around the stadium and he ran by me and said, "Hi, Mike." And I thought, holy mackerel, he actually knows who I am. and to be with him has been amazing. He's so buttoned up. He's so prepared. I mean, the copious notes that he pulls out before a game and puts in front of him so he can cover what he feels needs to be covered during a game. It's just incredible. And I have to say, I don't think I've ever met a kinder man. I mean, when you talk about a guy to me that is a football god, who everyone knows, who everybody tries to get a piece of, when we leave the broadcast booth, there are people lined up just to see him. And when they see him and call his name and stick their arms out, he doesn't ignore them. He fist bumps them. He's such a good man, which I have to say, you know, brings up his Bay Area background, his strong parents, Sarah High School. I mean, all of this. He has been such a pleasure to be around, and I'm a fan. I no longer care about the league like I used to when I worked for him. I don't feel like I have to defend the league like I used to when I was the head of officiating. And I don't feel like I have to defend Tom. There's naysayers out there everywhere, but I've been around a lot of broadcast crews. There is not a single person that I have seen that prepares more than Tom. There's not a single person that takes it more seriously than Tom takes it. And he was thrown into it without any experience at all. I think about Troy Aikman, who I worked with Troy, who I love Troy, and I think he does a phenomenal job. He worked games in NFL Europe before he actually worked in the NFL for Fox. He worked as part of a three-man booth before he set out on his own. And Tom got thrown into the fire without any of that experience. And I have learned to love the man just because, to me, he's so buttoned up and he's so kind and he's so generous with his time with the people that he works with that I think I will actually look back and think of him as a GOAT, as the GOAT in my broadcast career in terms of people that I have that I've worked with.
Wow. Wow. That was a strong compliment there. And you mentioned non-experience and also replacing Greg Olsen, who I think does a phenomenal job in the booth as well.
I will say this, the difference between Tom and Greg Olsen was far more time in the bars after the game with Greg Olsen than with Tom Brady. I'm more rested after being with Tom than I was with Greg.
He's a meticulous dresser, too. Right. I've noticed that when they do the zoom outs. I'm talking about Tom. I mean, he's just always buttoned up to a T.
He certainly is. He always looks good. And, you know, he's so damn tall. I mean, when I first met him, I mean, my neck was crooked because I was looking up the whole time. And he's fascinating to watch. And like I said, my hairstyle has changed a little bit. Oh, did you get a new hairstylist? Yeah, Tom's. Alex is on the road with him, and so she kind of fixes us all up a little bit before we go on air.
Oh, that's awesome,
Mike. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, this was awesome.
You get a lot of flack because obviously all the officials always do, and we appreciate you coming on here. We love hearing, you know, right from the source of someone who's knee deep in it and has been for his whole career. So thank you for coming on the Bay Area Airwaves with us.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Good anytime, stuff. Mike Pereira, River Islands guest line. Former vice president of officiating in the National Football League, head of officials, not a current rules analyst at Fox Sports. Very